We're going to start the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members in your packet, you have the minutes from March 21st. Representative Green, do you want to move the minutes from March 21st?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Green moves the minutes from March 21st. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are adopted. Representative Green, I see you have a guest with you today.
Yes, Madam Chair, this is my grandson, Kurt Green. He's with me for the whole week. He's brought forth a bill that he'll be testifying on in the Environmental Committee on Thursday.
Mm. Well, welcome to the committee. Happy you're here. Representative Loon, do you want to start us off? Welcome to the committee. I'm going to move House File 2722 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus state government finance bill. And Representative Loon, to your bill, I think you have some amendments.
I do have an amendment, Madam Chair. Should be a DE2 amendment in your packets.
I'm going to move the DE2 amendment to your amendment, Representative Loon. Do you, you just want to get the bill in the order and then we can talk about it some more?
I think that would make the most sense, Madam Chair.
Sure. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Loon, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. This bill is actually the topic that a constituent brought to me a few years ago, probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I've been trying to work on how we might be able to accomplish this. My constituent is a small business owner. She is a single woman, works out of her home, at least does her back office and her research in that out of her home, but she doesn't meet with customers at her home. But when filing her business with the Secretary of State's office, there really hasn't been an option for her, just not wanting to reveal her home address as part of that filing. And so, I've worked on trying to figure out how we could accomplish this. I've had some very good discussions with the Secretary of State's office about this. And so the DE amendment that I offered would basically allow this to be a checkoff on the forms, either the written forms or the electronic forms that a business would file, giving them the option of suppressing their home address, but only for businesses that are, if you're the only shareholder, member, or manager, or owner of the business, that you are a natural person, which is required under the law, and that the business, the address provided is the residential address of the sole shareholder, member, or owner. Someone will be obviously able to get this information by contacting the Secretary of State's office, so it's not suppressing it in all manners just from the website, but so if say a creditor was trying to contact a business about payment, or someone was wanting to serve a business for in a legal matter, a dispute, they would still be able to get the address by contacting the Secretary of State's office. But again, using the example of my constituent, she advertises her services on a website that she maintains and controls, but she doesn't put her home address there, but she has had people who have found information about her services on her website and then gone to the Secretary of State's website and stopped by her house. And again, as a single woman, it's a safety concern for her. And so I thought this was a reasonable way to try to give businesses of that type the option of not publishing their home address.
Okay. All right. And do you have any testifiers, Representative Lynn?
Well, Mr. Black with the Secretary of State's office is here if you wanted to offer comments.
Great. Mr. Black, welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Chair Anderson, Representative Loon, and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm the attorney for the Office of the Secretary of State. The Office of the Secretary of State does not object to this policy that is in this bill, or the idea of a person being able to protect themselves from publication on the website in certain circumstances is something that we understand, particularly since we do have the Safe at Home program in our office, and so this is not inconsistent with that. Although, as Representative Newton mentioned, it's still important for others to be able to get the information for purposes of service of process, if there's a legal dispute, or if there's a legitimate commercial reason for doing that. I might add that there's another reason other than security that somebody might not want to have that address published, and that is if you're living in an area where if your business is in an area, you're living in an area where you don't have a lot of parking, there's sometimes concerns, maybe even zoning concerns, about, well, you know, if you've got people coming to a home business, well, do you have sufficient parking for the traffic you're likely to generate, and even if it's unwanted traffic. So there are a number of different reasons. There is a fiscal note on the bill. We have we've looked at the DE1, or 2, I guess it is, excuse me, and concluded that this is going to be approximately about 650 hours worth of staff time if we were to put the choice on all of our forms and all of our online programming. And the reason is because there's just so many different places that we have addresses in our business filings. And so it's about $55,000, and then each year following that would be about 20% of that $11,000 for maintenance. We do have a fairly complicated online filing system, and so once you start introducing new things, it does have an impact. We do have business development staff who would need to take this up, and 650 hours just doesn't have to be a substantial amount and would push other things that they're working on back. And while I'm not the manager of that unit, I can tell you that every week we get a weekly update of what they're working on and what's next to be worked on. And already on that list, it's about 2 pages worth of projects just for the business services. So we're glad to do it. We need the resources to do it under this formulation, and we hope you'll provide that.
Great. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? Not members, I'm going to start with questions. Representative Rublin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is to Mr. Black. The fiscal note here, the 650 hours, just to do a couple of checkoffs, and the maintenance at 20% annually for the original programming cost. Are these numbers that are coming out of minute for your division?
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Representative, we're not a minute organization. We have some contact with minute, but we are not. We have our own in-house people who do this work.
Okay. Representative Ugham?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Black, have you ever looked at the competitive costs of doing this, in other words, getting an outside quote?
Mr. Black?
Madam Chair, Representative, it would be more expensive to do that. We've had staff augmentation in the past for major projects, and that's a higher hourly rate than what our costs are internally.
Representative Ugham?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this typical for such a small project that you would have to spend this much time and effort on this? It just seems way out of proportion for what we're doing here.
Mr. Black?
Madam Chair, Representative, I guess I would say it's not really a small project considering that we have we have scores of forms, and we have online filing for dozens of documents. So it's really not that small of a project in terms of what we have to work on.
Representative Ugham?
One further question. Thank you, Madam Chair. You're not going to be hiring anybody, Mr. Black, any extra people that just to take care of this. This is going to be done with your existing personnel.
Mr. Black?
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, this is projected to be done by our existing personnel.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also a question for Mr. Black. Does the amendment that we just added, does that satisfy any of the concerns that you just raised,
Mr. Black?
Madam Chair and Representative, the amendment that is, or the delete all amendment that was just passed it provides us a challenge to do the higher number that's in the fiscal note. It is, so that's the $55,000 in fiscal year 19 and then $11,000 after that. If there is another possibility, which we have discussed with Representative Loom, which is that if we don't put this particular choice on every form and online filing process, but simply wait for people to come and request it of us, and that would be language in the law that said that people could request it in writing, that would allow us to do this in a much less automated manner, and we reduce the cost substantially down to about, I think it's 11,000, you'll see in the fiscal note, there's a listing, 11,000 for the initial work and about, I think it's about $2,500 for each subsequent year. So we reduce it substantially if we didn't change the policy, but we simply changed how people could request it.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would just urge continued conversation between the bill author and the department then to address some of those issues and how that then relates to cost. Thank you.
And Mr. Black, I just missed that part. So the fiscal note that we have is not on the DE2. It's on a different version of it. So are you saying that the fiscal note would actually be 11,000 or no?
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair. No, the DE2 as it stands now would be substantially what the fiscal note requires, 55,000 and 11,000. But we are in discussion about an alternative way of requesting that the address be omitted from the website, and that's the alternative that I cited in the fiscal note, and that would be a substantially smaller amount of money, but it would still allow for the policy goal to be met.
Okay. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Black, question. In what ways are the addresses being displayed? Because my thought is, if you could just by rule suppress the address data element in a file before it gets presented to somebody online, wouldn't that be something that, from an electronic perspective, be the easiest? Just to say, do not display cell C or whatever from the relational database that you're pulling this from? Or are these like physical documents that have been scanned and are now something that people can download? Because I will admit I have never done this.
Mr. Black?
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, and you have me at the advantage since this is your area and I'm just a lawyer. But I want to let you know that so I'm not sure I understood a portion of your question.
So
I'll try and answer as best as I can. And so the estimate of the $55,000 in the conversation with our head of business services, computer development, there was discussion of how to suppress the data from being displayed. The data right now that we're talking about are displayed when you do a search in our database on our website for our company, and it comes up. There are different fields of different information, the name, the data that it was incorporated, the name of the agent, the registered office address, the principal executive office address, and so those are the addresses that we're dealing with in this bill. The estimate that we got from our computer staff was with respect to suppressing the data display, not eliminating the data, for a couple of reasons. The data, first of all, is submitted as required by law in order to incorporate or form an LLC or what have you. And it's required because, in fact, people need to contact the company, whether it's for legal reasons or whatever. The data is also, in this proposal, not made private. It is simply not displayed on the website. You'll see this, the courts do this. The courts, some information that the courts have, which is public, you have to go to the courthouse to get. It's not displayed on web. But the $55,000 is the estimate that we received for suppression, not anything at least as I understand it. So, I mean, I think they're headed down the same path you are, but that's simply what the cost will be.
Representative Nash?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Black, I'm not trying to create a gotcha moment or have a nerd moment here. It's just as simple as writing a rule that says don't display address block. You can suppress it in the database, the relational database that you use to store these things. And that's pretty straightforward, and I would ask that you go back and reanalyze that, because $55,000 for that seems kind of spendy, and because it's pretty simple. It's just that you depopulate a cell in the database, say don't display this. Now, I don't know what database you guys are using. I would imagine it's SQL.
Okay. I'm sure it works on Nash. I know that at one time we used that. I don't know if we still use it. We might. And I'd be glad to take back to our computing staff the suggestion you made. I will say that I know that there's a fair chunk of that time which would be regression testing, because we would need to do...
We're all for testing.
Yes. Better testing than what the otherwise consequences would be.
And I think, Mr. Black, if your experts could come and discuss this with Representative Nash, I know he's always been very willing to work with agency officials on this IT issue, and I think that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe this is the third time I've heard this bill. And I think, Jennifer, Representative Loon, that you have a very, very good bill here. It protects people that need to be protected in a situation that is kind of really of their not their making. But I really do appreciate your work on this. Madam Chair, I guess this next question is maybe for you or for someone in fiscal staff. So the fiscal note that we see here talks about the $55,000 and the $11,000 ongoing on this. Is there a process in place, or how do we verify if that full $55,000 is used or $11,000 on an ongoing basis that we would have appropriated? What happens to the money if there's, if it gets done in more of an expeditious fashion at a cheaper cost? Does that money just stay there, or how does that, what happens to it?
Ms. Roberts, do you want to comment on that?
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, I think it would depend on how you chose to appropriate the money. If you have it as a very specific appropriation, they could only use the money for this purpose, and if it wasn't used for this purpose at the end of the biennium, it would cancel back to the fund. If you had rolled this into a more general appropriation to an agency, then they would have the ability to use it for other purposes. So you could choose to structure it however you want to.
Is that addressable?
I'm good.
Members, any other questions? If not, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2722, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Okay. Members, I forgot to mention this too. Anything business that we don't finish within our allotted time, we will come back this evening to finish those items. So with that, Representative Schumacher. Representative Schumacher, I'm going to move House File 2902, and I don't see any amendments. I assume we're good. And to you, Bill.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 2902 takes the Pew methodology that we have adopted a few years ago to do return on investment for our state investments in different programs, and moves that to the Legislative Budget Office. The idea with this is that who better to take care of tracking the return on investment that we have in programs but the people who are working on the fiscal notes for the state. We want this to be part of the conversation on the Legislative Budget Office and the work that's being done there. And the process for transitioning this is already in statute, so we're good to go on that area. And the Results First has done some pretty good work over the last few years on many of the programs that we have in the state. I know in our committee we've done a deep dive into the points on just mental illness and all the mental illness programs that we offer in the state, and what that means and what the return is on those. And I just think it would be a better fit into the Legislative Budget Office, and ask for your support.
Okay. And do you have any testifiers?
I do not.
Okay. And I do see that Ms. Kelly is on the list. Ms. Kelly, did you want to speak to the bill? Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Margaret Kelly, Assistant Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with Results First, it's an evidence-based decision-making model supported by Pew Charitable Trust and the MacArthur Foundation. Pew and MacArthur have been working diligently for the past 10 years to encourage states to adopt, use, and refine the Results First model. The 2015 legislature passed legislation authorizing and funding the state's adoption of the Results First model. MNB began work right away, creating a Results First team and working with Pew to put best practices in place. I personally have the pleasure of working with Dr. Pete Bernardi, who heads up our Results First team. Dr. Bernardi is an incredible, talented individual who is both a practitioner and professor in research methodologies. He quickly hired a great staff, some of whom you may have met, a PhD candidate, Dr. Weston Merrick, who has presented Results First outcomes to committees. Laura Kramer also has accompanied him on that. So MNB uses high-quality evidence to estimate the extent to which publicly funded services may generate positive, cost-effective outcomes for Minnesotans. We partner with state, local, and national partners to identify and estimate the benefits and cost of a range of public services that support the well-being of Minnesotans. We've had great success as a state with our current team, and the current structure is working well. We have released 4 detailed reports since December of 2016 in the Corrections and Human Services area. As a result, Minnesota is among the top 3 states for evidence-based policy making, behind only Washington and Utah, in a recent report by the National Pew MacArthur Results First Initiative. The report cited MNB's work in using evidence-based practices and benefit-cost analysis to inform budgeting. More than 80% of state and local policymakers who responded to a recent survey said that Results First findings were easy to use and accurate. The current organizational structure has allowed the team to publish findings faster and in more policy areas by leveraging executive branch resources, relationships, and philanthropic funding. Transferring this effort could be disruptive. Transferring the program would likely involve new staff needing to learn how to use the econometric model and to reestablish trust with state agencies and local partners who provide the data and use the findings. Projects take 10 to 12 months of continuous work with agencies, counties, and providers. It would be difficult to maintain momentum if staff needed to redirect their attention to other priorities during the legislative session. As you consider this bill, I encourage you to reach out to Pew MacArthur to seek their advice and understand their experiences in other states when this work has been transitioned, and to reach out to your local partners as well to understand their support. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions at this point? Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I'll wait if there's questions for the testifier. Mine is more general, so I saw another hand.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question to the bill author. Does this bill in any way contain any compacts with other states?
Representative Schumacher?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, no.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this question, I think, would be directed to the bill author. I know we're in discussions around the Legislative Budget Office and this being a new function, and we've had discussions in here around the fiscal responsibility transfer. So why is there urgency to start defining what the Legislative Budget Office does within the scope of what you're trying to do now rather than waiting until the Budget Office is set up? I'm just kind of curious as to why this now before we've actually created an entity. I mean, can you share a little bit about the urgency to do this now?
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Wilson. I wouldn't necessarily describe it as an urgency. This is, again, just something that I want to keep as part of the discussion about the role that the Legislative Budget Office can bring and just what kind of ideas and purview that they can have with this. It seems to me to be a good fit here, and so we want to make sure that that we have that as part of the discussion as it gets launched to know that this is on the horizon or could be on the horizon as well.
Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Representative Schumacher, closing comments?
No.
Okay, members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2902 be laid over for possible inclusion in the state government finance bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? I guess I don't need to do that, do I? We did it just for we like you so much, Jeff.
Oh, that
right?
Was touching.
All right.
Thank you, members.
There we go. I've got Representative Haley. And Representative Haley, as you're getting settled in, I'm going to move House File 3198. You referred to the Committee on HHS Finance, Health and Human Services Finance. And I see that you, is this A3 amendment yours?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair.
I'm going to move the A3 amendment. Members, to get the bill in the order that the author wishes, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Haley, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate the time today to present House File 3198. As you know, I represent the District of Goodhue and Wabasha counties, and we're here today to talk about the high individual health insurance rates that my counties are experiencing, but also most of outstate Minnesota. The disparity between Goodhue and Wabasha counties and the next neighboring county, Dakota, for example, can be over 40%. This concern about high health insurance rates is impacting our business growth and the sustainability of the communities I represent and causing economic hardships for farmers, self-employed individuals, retirees, and small business owners. As I said, premiums can sometimes be $30,000 to $40,000 with $6,000 to $12,000 deductibles. My bill requests a study from the Office of the Legislative Auditor to study these cost disparities in the rating areas and make recommendations to reduce or eliminate them. I know that the problem is complex and a study doesn't solve all the issues. I want you to know that I'm seeking unbiased information from the Office of the Legislative Auditor so that we as a legislature can make decisions going into the next biennium. I've been actively involved with all the partners and players that would be affected, the providers, the insurance agencies, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, MDH, and Commerce. In order to give you a better idea of the impact this is having to outstate Minnesota, I have a couple testifiers. Madam Chair, I don't know if you want them to proceed now, if you want questions on the bill first.
No, let's get the testifiers first.
Okay. So first I'll have Kyle Merkins introduce himself and provide testimony.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kyle Merkins, from Minnesota. Just for the record, my business name is Lake Pepin Innovation. I think it says Industries there. Lake Pepin Innovation, my business name. I am a small business owner. I've established my business here in Minnesota in 2011. I focus primarily on consulting, development, and cloud-based platforms, so any kind of customer data that businesses want to store, I consult and develop on that. Over the past couple of years, I had my business established in St. Paul. In November of last year, I moved my business back to Redding, Minnesota, where I'm originally from. As everyone knows, the insurance rates are always climbing over the past few years. Long are gone the days where my insurance rate for myself was $170 a month. I have a family of two, including me, so it would be three, and my rates were around $1,000 a month. I actually lost my health insurance a couple of years in a row. First being that that was, I can't remember the stipulation was, but I had to go into Blue Cross Blue Shield Plow in Minnesota, and I had to find another carrier, end up losing my business. So I got a small group plan for a business the size of one with a preferred one. Then last year they put in stipulations on you had to have an employee to be covered as a small group. So I looked at going the individual route for myself, continue that path, or look at bringing on my first employee. What happened was I actually got quotes from my broker for my business established in St. Paul. They did not have an updated file on my business. Just to put in perspective, I went and got quotes for me as an individual, anywhere between $20,000 and $27,000 for Goodhue County as an individual, with out-of-pocket maxes reaching $28,000, $33,000. And then in the business race for a group plan, they're anywhere between $24,000 and $28,000 having one employee. So I looked at it and said, well, as a business owner, I want to use my money the best I can, and I actually wanted to put it towards someone else's premiums versus just myself. I thought that was a better use of my money. So then with 2 days left to go in December, December 15th was the enrollment deadline. my broker said, I apologize, but your business has moved to Redmond, it looks like, and we have it in St. Paul, and so we have to resubmit your quote. It's going to be more expensive, they advise me, and I said, okay, well, what's the difference going to be? So for the same plan, same benefits, covered in Minnesota, what was once between $24,000 and $28,000 increased to $30,000 and $36,000. So this results in an annual difference for my premiums. Again, I have one employee, and we both have families of size of three, between $6,700 and $7,900 per year. And so that's just being in Goodyear County. And the kicker here is my employee I hired, he actually resides in Texas as a remote employee for me, and his rates go up, and he'll never see in our area Mayo Clinic services at all. So what I'm looking for right now is I'm actually going to move my business back up to St. Paul next year because I don't want to keep throwing money out the window or too hard for my money as a small business owner to continue to throw it out in health insurance premiums. So I definitely support what Representative Haley is going here, trying to do here with this bill, and look at why is southeastern Minnesota the place getting higher rates than the rest of the state. And I think this leads to two questions that I ask myself is, you know, why do people want to have a business in Goodyear County at all? Why start or run a business in Goodyear County? And I said they shouldn't, and they probably won't, given the health insurance rates. And then two, you know, why do people like us continue to do this when we're always paying more and more in health insurance premiums? You know, we want to be small business owners, we want to succeed, and it's getting harder and harder to do it. So I fully support the what this bill is going for here, trying to figure out what the discrepancies are.
And Mr. Merkins, I have to tell you, I heard your testimony in the Commerce Committee, and yours was by far the most compelling. Not that the rest that didn't do a great job, but it was really compelling to me when you discussed this in Commerce Committee, so I appreciate you coming again and sharing it with the members here that don't serve on Commerce.
Thank you very much.
And then, Representative Haley, you have a couple more testifiers?
Yes, if I could, Madam Chair. Sure.
And welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record.
Thank you for this opportunity, Madam Chair. I'm Robert Banks. This is my wife, Marlene. We own Strike Tool, Banks Outdoors, in Cannon Falls. And I also sit on the EDA of Cannon Falls, so I'm going to try and wear two hats here. We did a comparison with our insurance company, too, and we had them compare our rates of Goodyear County to Dakota County. And it ended up to be a 65% increase going from Dakota County to Goodyear County, which was shocking, as you can imagine. To talk about a few of the things that are going on in Cannon Falls, if you understand the geographics of Cannon Falls, Dakota County borders Cannon Falls to the west. As an example, we had a development that started up a mile out of Cannon Falls in Dakota County. It sold out like that. Cannon Falls hasn't hardly had a building permit for a house in Cannon Falls in 10 years. People told me that moved to that new housing development, they saved, with the health care costs and the lower taxes, they almost made their new house payment. Wow. That's how extreme this is. And you wonder why taxes, too. Putting on my EDA hat, as we were talking about, we have an opportunity with EDA right now to bring a data center into Cannon Falls. They don't want to be in Goodyear County. So they're going to be right across the line into Dakota County. Well, that's fine because our city is willing to annex in land in Dakota County. But we had discussions on the city possibly moving the city hall or the new city address in Dakota County just to save health care costs. Now when you start thinking about that, you go, well, wow, southeastern Minnesota has thousands of township workers, city workers, county workers, all in the same boat, which the savings is going to be millions of dollars in health care costs. So, you know, that's just some of the examples that we're dealing with. As an EDA, attracting a business to Cannon Falls is near impossible, let alone drawing from another state. Wanted to try and make you understand what we're going through in southeastern Minnesota.
And Madam Chair,
Mrs. Banks, yeah.
We're also losing our school enrollment just across the borderline here. They're moving into another district and there's another school close. So even that's being very effective in a fire school.
Sure. So. Great. Representative Haley, any comments before I... Okay, no, unless these members have questions. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify to this bill? And I have Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, too, heard this in Commerce. It was really compelling testimony. Representative Haley, I don't remember you being in our committee before. Have you presented a bill here previously?
Thank you for the question, Representative Nash. I said to my distinguished guest today, oh, no, I forgot the treats. I owe you one.
Looking around the table, I think. Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking around the table, people seem
very
hungnackish. So just because, you know, a no vote's easy on, no, I'm kidding.
Representative Olson. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I had the opportunity to hear this bill as well in HHS reform, and I think compelling reasons you're bringing this forward, and Representative Haley, thanks for looking out for the best interest of your folks and what they're doing, and I think you've raised some good points of what you're trying to do, and I appreciate that. And we had some exchange after committee, a question I raised there, but wondering if you could speak a little bit to, right now we just have a blank fiscal appropriation for this, could you speak a little to your... Having known the answer you had given in that committee, but if you could speak a little bit more towards the costs and of this and what you're thinking on that end would be helpful.
And if it helps, Representative Haley, I had our folks talk to the legislative auditor's piece on that. I assume that you're talking to page 3?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yep.
And so they are currently working on a fiscal note on that, and as I understand it, would travel then through the HHS finance. I don't know, Representative Haley, if you have anything more to add to that at all.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Olson. As I said, we've been working with the various constituencies that would be involved, and I'm trying to do this expediently, so therefore we changed the date in the amendment so that we would have this date of January 1st. So that has some impact on the cost, as the Office of the Legislative Auditor may have to hire outside resources versus doing it all internally. So they're considering that fact now that I moved the date up on them. We're also, in talking to the insurance carriers, looking at if they can use data that the Office of the Legislative Auditor and Commerce already have on file from them, so they wouldn't have to request the data again, and that could impact the cost. So those two factors are kind of playing out, and I think there's a possibility that we can use funds that are in the premium subsidy account that weren't fully used that we allocated last session. So that's another thing I'm looking at that would so we wouldn't have to reallocate new money. So those three factors should be addressed by the time this bill hits some HHS finance, and I'll have that dollar amount figured out at that point.
Thank you.
All right. Members, I just have a technical change that we need to make. Mr. Holtquist pointed out that in the A3 amendment, it really should have read line 31. Mr. Guerin, can you help on that, please?
Madam Chair, yes, so looking at the amendment, what I see is that the amendment is drafted to the first engrossment of the bill, and what you have in front of you is the second engrossment. So the page and line references may be off, but it looks like the correct page and line reference for this bill, as it is before the committee, would be page 2, line 31.
And Mr. Guerin, is that something that can be taken care of outside of us voting on it, or do we need to change that somehow?
Madam Chair, I think we can have this corrected by the advisor staff when they do the engrossment.
Okay, great. Awesome. And Representative Haley, any closing comments?
Thank you very much for hearing this bill. And as I said in the Commerce Committee, I want you all to know that the purpose of gathering the data isn't to be punitive to any party to this arrangement. What I am seeking to do again is not use a hammer but use a flashlight and just shine some light on the situation and provide us all with some information so that we can address it next biennium. Thank you very much.
All right. With that, members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3198 be referred to the Committee on HHS Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the bill is on its way. Thank you, and thank you for your testimony. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yep.
Thank you. And Truth's next time, Representative.
All right. We have got Representative Fossil. And welcome to the committee, Representative Glasswell. I'm going to move your bill, House File 2809, be laid over for possible inclusion. Oh, does this? Oh, excuse me. I'm going to change that to be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. And I don't see any amendments. If you want to speak to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Excuse me. The bill is related to continuity of government, and it's very simple, and I'll be as brief as possible, that the bill is to make sure that all three of the branches of our state government has a plan in place in case of an emergency to be able to relocate to an area where if we cannot conduct state business in St. Paul, that we would be able to have a plan, that we would have a plan in place to be able to relocate and continue on the state's business. So in a nutshell, that's what the bill does.
We appreciate your brevity. Is there anyone that wishes to testify to this bill? Members, questions? Representative Lund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grasso, really great bill. Am I to understand that after all these years and with FEMA requiring municipalities to do this, that the state has absolutely no plan?
Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I believe the executive branch of the state has one in place, but it's up to the legislative and the judicial to get theirs in place.
Representative
Ogle. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Very timely bill. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and glad to be a co-author on this bill with you. You know, when the bill was brought to my attention, asked a lot of questions. If something were to happen and we were not in session, or were in session, we would have nowhere to go to deal with emergency appropriations or things like that. Is that correct?
Representative Grasso.
That is correct. Madam Chair, that is correct.
So,
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, so, members, this is something that I think we can all get behind. This is something that is vital to the continuity of government that we have here at the state. So I hope you support this bill.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, Madam Chair, the Mutual Admiration Society has already done my work for me here today, so I hope pass.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe the executive branch does have a place where they can conduct their businesses, and I think that's at Camp Ripley. So.
Okay. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward. It's a couple of years ago when we were redoing the Capitol, it was just amazed me how difficult it was to find a place for us. It seemed like we could have just thrown ourselves into a gym somewhere, but boy, that was just epic, and the controversy related to that. So I'm glad we're having a discussion. Thanks for having it.
My only question, so if I understand correctly, we have to meet in St. Paul, so does this change that so that we could meet outside of St. Paul as well? Representative Grasso?
If we were not to be able to conduct business here, Madam Chair, then we would have to find another location. If we couldn't meet in St. Paul or in the metro area, then I think there are three options that we are to put into our plan of places that we could relocate to.
Okay. All right. Great. Representative Kunesh Bodine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, what sort of emergencies would be considered necessary for this kind of operation?
Representative.
Natural disasters, such as I would imagine, whether that would disrupt the functions here. Natural disasters first? Okay. Natural type incidents in case of attack or something like that. And then unrest or civil unrest that would make it impossible to conduct business here as well. There's a list of different things in here, but those are just three of them that I recall right off the top of my head.
Representative Nash.
And I was also going to ask if there are going to be regional areas for the different legislators or executives, if we were all to have to meet and confer, if it was all going to be that we had to come here, and if let's say St. Paul was under siege, where we would go for those kind of those kind of issues. I was just kind of curious to see if there was a plan that was sort of laid out, or if that's going to be something that will be worked on as part of this bill.
Representative Glassell.
As far as the plan is, there's really three things I think that need to be done: identification of three suitable locations, a plan to provide timely and secure communications to make sure that we can communicate with the public and with each other, and plans to securely transport all members and designated members as necessary equipment. So those are some of the things that the plan must have, and in order to make it mesh with the other branches so that, you know, we're all on the same sheet of music when it comes to, if that time were to come where we'd have to relocate.
Representative Ganesh-Bodhi.
Just one thing came to my mind. At the federal level, if a federal official is supposed to meet for an emergency, they make arrangements for them to bring their families, don't they? And if that's so, that would never be part of this, or would it possibly?
Representative Gross.
You know, I'd have to refer to research. I do not think so.
Representative Kunesh?
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Closing comments, Representative Grossel?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2809 be laid over for referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. It's on its way. Thank you, Representative
Grossel. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Howe? You're bad in cleanup, Representative Howe. I'm going to move House File 1007 be laid over for possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Bill. We have an amendment in our packets, members, the A1 amendment. Representative Howe, this is your amendment?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to move the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. With your bill as amended, Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1007 is an attempt to avoid unnecessary lawsuits between state and local government. This bill does this by requiring a set of criteria to be met to ensure that agencies make an effort to work with local governments to avoid litigation, as it's the citizens that end up paying both sides of the lawsuit. The criteria that must be met, I don't know if you want me to run through each step. I think it's all in the bill laid out. So I think that it's pretty self-explanatory. I am starting now to meet with some state agencies to try and, there are some glitches. That's why you see the one amendment now. And now I've been reached out to just prior to the committee. We'll continue to work on it to make sure that we iron out all those differences. But that is the bill. I do also understand that I didn't realize that local government does sue state government, so I might make this a mutually supporting way so it actually works both ways to avoid, because it doesn't make any difference which way the lawsuit comes from. The citizens are paying both sides of it, and that's what we're trying to avoid. So this is basically Conflict Resolution 101.
Okay, great. And I think we'll have Mr. Meyer. I assume you want to testify. We'll do that first. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the record. Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. And I think Representative Howe did a great job describing the bill at hand. Obviously, the state, we want to make sure we exhaust all of our remedies before we go to court. The concerns that we have are the timelines that this may set up. We have certain dates that we have to file court documents by, and we wouldn't want one party to be able to, for lack of a better term, smoke the other one out by not scheduling a meeting in time in the 30-day or 45-day window that we have. So I'm very optimistic we can work out some language that all the stakeholders involved will support. So we'll work with the author to do that and make sure that you're kept in the loop.
Great. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify to this bill? If not, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question to the bill author. On lines 1.11 and 1.12, the definition of local government talks about political subdivision, and it talks about county, home rule, charter, statutory cities or towns. Is there a reason why school districts and or regional governments were not included as part of the definition of local governments or political subdivisions?
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative O'Driscoll, no, probably just an oversight on my part.
I'm sure just a strong suggestion that those be included because those are other units of local government or political political subdivisions that I thought that was going to be the bill author's answer, that it might have just been an oversight, but I think that's very important to be included as well.
Okay. Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, author, for this bill. Looking it over, it doesn't seem to include a certain set of cases that have happened recently where a constitutional state entity sued local government for basically following statute that was passed and signed into law, and that local government is defending the constitutionality of said law, and being forced again by a state government entity. I think we might want to look at, I don't think we can amend it to this, but I think maybe that could be the next bill on the agenda.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kwong, I will say that the thought crossed my mind, but that brings in a whole host of other issues that I think, having some discussion on that, I think I'm going to let that dog sleep for another day. That's a fight I'm not willing to have at this moment, so we'll leave that. And besides, those constitutional officers are elected officials, and when they go down that road, that's something that they've got the voters can make up their own mind. So I'm going to leave that go.
Representative Kwong?
But in Claims Committee tonight, on our agenda, hits that topic. And the point that you're doing here is trying to avoid, taxpayers having to pay for both sides of litigation. You think the state and local government could work it out without going to the courts. And I think we need to look at saving the taxpayers' dollars like your bill is doing. Thank you.
Closing comments, Representative Howe?
No, thank you, Madam Chair, and I just appreciate the discussion and ask for your support. I think it's good policy.
Representative Howe, we look forward to any adjustments that you have after conferring with everybody, too. So appreciate you coming today. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1007 be laid over possible inclusion in the State Government Finance Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, and Mr. Kurt Green. Can I have you come here, please?